Welcome back to Portrait of an Editor. I am Francis Lombard. A reminder, there is a Portrait of an Editor Patreon page where you can find older interviews. I just moved a bunch of my interviews to Patreon and added a new outtake. So check it out for just a buck a month. And we have a sponsor, Magic Mind, which is a great productivity drink. I talk about that later in the podcast. Finally, the Dev in the Dam could be 2024's theme for the comic industry. For now, it's the title of Goats Flying Press's first release. After a two-year break, I talked with Sebastian Gerner about his new publishing venture, Goats Flying Press, and whether it was a smart idea to launch a new company during these crazy times for comic book publishing. Sebastian really gets into the details about his present and future plans and the attitude he's taking towards this whole new adventure. It's an honest and optimistic conversation, and we even try to figure out if Marvel and DC Comics are relevant nowadays. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. So, Sebastian, welcome back to Portrait of an Editor. We're just going to jump right into this because before we even started recording, we just started talking about some really cool things, some interesting things. And it got me thinking about when I got back into comics in like the 98, I think. I went to my first, it was in LA. So I went to my first Comic-Con. I don't know if it was 98 or 99. I think it was 99. So I've never been to San Diego Comic-Con. Right up to that point, I started working at an agency and started really getting back and reading like comic book resources and stuff like that. And Warren Ellis had a thing, a weekly thing. And I started following his stuff. And I really didn't know who he was, really, because I had been out of comics for a while. I don't know how I, you know, people are like, you didn't know who Warren Ellis was in the 90s? I'm like, yeah, I didn't. You know, I figured out who it was later and started. And he was really announcing that maybe in a week comics were going to be dead. Comics were done. Marvel was in bankruptcy. But I was looking, I had come out of Comic-Con, and it was 65,000 people. It was just Nerdfest, basically. Mm-hmm. But I was looking from Hollywood, and I had just started working in animation. I was looking at computers coming in, AI, but computers coming into animation. They had already just done Tarzan. They were now looking at something else, but Tarzan was the one that had a bit of communicate. And I bet you if you look at it now, it looks really wonky. Mm-hmm. But it was able to do some action sequences that were interesting. And Marvel's amazing. You know, Spider-Man, Sam Raimi, that was coming together finally. And my pitch to get the job was part of like comics and animation are all going to merge together. The computer's going to allow sequences and stuff. There's going to be a new like golden age, but then, and that ended up sort of pretty much happening. As I was sitting there working, I was reading all this stuff and I was getting back into comics because, you know, being at San Diego sort of jazzed me again, and I was beginning to read and stuff and just getting back into it. But the doom and gloom. And now we have the doom and gloom. Here we are 20 years later, 25 years later. And as you were talking off, just this doom and gloom of stuff of, are we, you know, is comics going to even survive 2024? Now, you know, everybody's got the joke that comics won't be, you know, the death of comics for the last 100 years or something, you know, but here you are starting a new publishing, Goats Flying Press. We talked at New York Comic Con in 2022. Mm-hmm. I guess around that time you started thinking of Goats Flying Press, because in some research you basically made the announcement in 2023, and that had been about a year that you were thinking about it. Basically, it happened really quickly.
Very quickly.
For you, once you came up with the idea to pursue something. But to get back to the things, I mean, what's your take on comics now that you're jumping in as a publisher? So you're hoping that the industry and fans will still be around to buy your stuff, really?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's my 16th year in professional comics, which feels like a long time.
That's a good career.
That's a solid career. As I was saying before, one of the go-to things I try to tell younger, you know, artists, writers, creators who reach out to me and you know, I try to chat with them about getting into the industry, obviously, which has completely changed since when I got into it in 2008. But I tell them, rather than try and give like specific advice on here's what you do about a pitch, here's what you do about a publisher, is I try to kind of give like bedrock advice, like how to keep yourself happy and healthy and focused on, obviously everyone wants to break in, everyone wants to be successful and do this for a living. But I think what's more important, so I feel like genuinely every year that I work in the industry, it's harder and harder to feel like you have any control over the actual monetary success or how you yourself will feel about your artistic achievements. Those are always things that are going to be massively in flux. So I try to tell them just like it's very normal to feel conflicted about everything. And I say like every year up until maybe a year or two ago that I was in comics, I felt like this is going to be my last year. I'd never felt like this was going to be the thing I'm going to do forever, or rather major of my life. It was always going to be like a phase. And I think now I finally kind of, when I pulled the trigger on Goat's Flank Press, I decided, I was like, no, this is not a phase. Like, this is my life. And it felt incredible to kind of just embrace comics to that extent, because I feel like I've always kept it at arm's length. I always kind of had a job between myself and the thing, the comic, you know, a job that I love and that was deeply inspired, you know, by my passions. But it was always kind of like, well, I would stop doing this and then I'll stop doing it. And now it's kind of like, I'm going to make myself a home where I can do comics forever, regardless of what happens in my kind of main role as editor-in-chief of TKO or whatever that may lead to. And it feels good. And that comes at a strange time when, I don't know if my personal feelings about comics are like the Dorian Gray. It's bad right now. Obviously, I think that that's a mixture of things. The market is contracting. We're kind of generally, I think comics have these kind of five to six year cycles where things look pretty good. One big publisher comes out on top. It's usually either Marvel or DC. They'll have some kind of creative updraft or sales updraft that'll lead to, you know, some careers getting made. Those trickle over into creator-owned books and a couple of other publishers that kind of can pick up in the windfall from that. And I think we haven't really seen something like that happen in a minute. I think the close corporate ties from Marvel and DC to Disney and Warner Brothers, respectively, have started. I think they've tightened the reins a little bit more. There's a little bit less freedom and a little bit less, I just kind of feel like buzz around that kind of stuff. Through no fault of any of the creators, it's kind of just the Leviathan-esque nature of these corporations, you know, making their monthly budgets. And that always affects, you know, every publisher that comes in behind them. So, and into all of that, of course, you kind of bring this now what we still call AI, which is basically just, you know, these scraping large language models that we're all being told is going to change everything, which I genuinely, like, when you read up a little bit on it, it's the same stuff we heard a couple of years ago about crypto and NFTs. Like, it's the same scam. I do actually think that long term this one is going to stick around longer and probably have pretty severe consequences, but it's scary, of course. And I'm, you know, I have my concerns about the kind of work that I do, and seeing people telling me, or people seeing online, some individuals who are convinced that this is all going to be over soon. And I'm just kind of like, you know what? So many things to say about this, but like the doom and gloom I don't get. I think a lot of artists, either they're just voicing their fears publicly, which is fine. That's what social media is for. But I do think I've seen a lot of younger creators or middle creators who are like telling on themselves or like kind of giving up a little bit too early, because I really want to wait and see where this goes. And that's kind of where Goat's Flying Press comes in again, because I wanted to try it once I decided to like become a publisher at whatever scale, you know, small scale for now. But I want to bring the entire comic book making process down to almost like a one-man band, just to see what I can produce. Because I think so much of the doom and gloom and the general malaise in not just comics industry, but creative industry in general, is that there's so many middlemen at this point that you kind of lose sight on how incredibly joyful it is to create something and to know that there's an audience out there that's like legitimately kind of waiting for it. Like there's so many kind of little Venn diagrams that Goats Flying Press and other, you know, small indie press publishers come into. It's the independent comics, it's the do-it-yourself,
yep.
It's the Kickstarter communities, like, and these are small communities by comparison to, say, Marvel or DC or manga or what have you, but they're sizable enough that if you play your cards right and you kind of don't, and this is, of course, where my specific position comes in, and I'm quite privileged and lucky, and I'm very open about the fact that I'm not going to be making any money off of Goats Flying Press. I've earmarked a sum that I've kind of placed into the development of the publisher, which basically means like the legal boundary set up, like having an LLC formed in the state of New York and getting a little bit of, you know, purchasing a label maker and a scale and all the kind of things. So small scale, but it's here, it's working. You know, I'm waiting on my first shipment. The book's the first title. It's very beautiful. Like part and parcel, it's a really, really good, physically kind of like impactful book. And now I'm going to be going through the hardest part of making a comic is selling it and trying to find, you know, markets for it and the readership and corral them. And I've been approached by various, you know, outlets that are like, oh, we can help you make inroads here with this algorithm there. And I'm kind of shying away from that, A, because I can't really afford it because it's all like cutting into the overhead, but also I really want to try and do this on my own. Like it's almost like a lemonade shop, only it's really good lemonade because I've been making it for 16 years and I kind of know a lot of about the comic book making process. So I'm oddly at a spot where I feel more optimistic than ever, and I want to really hold on to that because knowing myself and how hard it is to get me to be optimistic, there's something in the air right now that I feel is very invigorating to myself. And what's more is I'm feeling a lot more confident about sharing that with my collaborators and other people in the industry, and especially like younger creators. I do a little bit of teaching. Like I have a class at Pratt once a year where I kind of do a little like, you know, career day at Pratt. And I do, just recently I started doing, thesis mentorship at SVA here in art school. And there's so many incredible young creators, artists, animators, designers, illustrators, who all of whom want to make a comic. And I genuinely don't really know where to send them, like which publisher in the industry to send them to. So that's another idea I have, is where I could have Goats Flying Press be kind of like a stepping stone into the industry. Learn how to read a contract, learn how to read a script, learn how to make a comic. I'll publish it. It won't make anyone rich yet, but genuinely over time, I really want to build this as a publisher that's just there for the reader, there for the creators. Nobody knows what happens at the top scale. I don't care how big your name is or who your agent is or who you know in Hollywood. It is all chaos and luck at that stage.
Yeah. One thing I noticed that... you only took you 300 people to get this thing to move forward on this.
Yeah.
I think 300 backers, which in the scale of things, I mean, in a country of 350 million people, in a world of, you know, 8 billion people,
right.
I mean, that's nothing to get a first issue out, to get the wheels moving, basically. And at that level is, I mean... as you said, like just sort of doing it yourself and being, you know, having an artist and just, I mean, is that the new approach really? It's like, you're not, if you want to love comics and produce comics and maybe get some kind of return, I mean, how many people do you really need? Do you need, you know, like 15,000 people? I was reading articles of maybe this has changed this number, but if you can sell 15,000 issues at Image, you might be doing all right. You know, if you have three books that you're doing, you could be calling that a living, you know, an all right living.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately the goal is like 300 is, first of all, I'm not like, you know, I'm happy for the 300. You know, going into a Kickstarter, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, well, can I count on my name?
Well, that's a low threshold to get to.
It's a low threshold.
Yeah,
you know?
Which is awesome.
I think it's great. And that's one of the reasons why I thought that founding a publisher, like having the Kickstarter run under a publishing entity, so it's not Sebastian Gerner is launching a Kickstarter, which I could, of course, also do and might also have had similar success, but I want to I want to corral and aggregate the success over time. So the second Kickstarter maybe will be a little bit easier. Maybe I'll get to 500 backers. And then at some point, something's going to break through, right? I'll get lucky, or I'll work with a creator who's just kind of like, what is happening? Or the muse will be at our, the wind will be at our backs, and then you'll have 1,000 backers. And the larger you can grow that number, legitimately, like if I had 1,000 backers, or say 1,000 readers who feel compelled by virtue that we've convinced them with quality, or just like our fun kind of books, to chip in $15 to $20 a year, once or twice a year, for how many Kickstarters we do, that's an operating budget that is minuscule by comparative, you know, other publishers. But I can make books, and unique books, and good books, and quality books forever. And so as that grows, sorry to interject, as that grows, I'm hoping it'll be easier for me to stretch out further, either to take, like, my dream is to basically just identify an artist or a creator and have the book not be done yet. Like, I'm working with, you know, obviously The Dead and the Damned with Kelly and other creators that I'm working with right now. Like, I'm paying them a page rate out of pocket. It's not, you know, what I would love to be paying them ultimately, but it is what I can afford right now. The fact that the book is creator owned, and the publishing agreements are very, very creator forward. I really only need to make like ends meet. Like, I don't have to make money. It just can't lose money. And for my first year, you know, I'm very excited about this. And because it's so small, because it is just a tea light, there's very little fear I have of it like getting shut down. Like, I don't have investors to legitimize anything to. I don't have a huge overhead. Like, 100% of the labor and most of the costs are put in by myself. And as long as I'm willing to do it, which, as you can hear, like, I'm now more than ever, because it's an incredible feeling to be able to do things and try things and just create an experience for readers and backers. And I actually think that that's the key long term, is that if your goal is to break through to every market everywhere and be on every website and have to post on every social media platform and be in every store, you're going to drive yourself crazy and burn out. And I'm going to try and identify things that work for me, make me happy, give readers and retailers and backers a sense of community and feeling like, oh, you're dealing with the individual, and it's not just, you know, another set of emails you're getting. And long term, build that as big as it can be. And if it stays modest, it stays modest. But everyone, you know, who buys a book and reads it, or writes in, or, you know, buys a pin or a sticker, like, I just want to get back to that community feeling.
Is part of it, because looking at your career, we've known each other for a couple, you know, like, what, 3 years now or something, ever since we first
longer,
talked?
I think, actually,
probably, yeah. Longer. Wow, I've been doing this forever. you know, you're coming from Marvel. Mm-hmm. You're editing at Image. Mm-hmm. You are now editor-in-chief at TKO. You've written for TKO a couple of things. You mm-hmm. wrote for Vault. You had a mm-hmm. series set up at Vault. And looking at the back of The Dead and the Damned, your thank yous, there are people that names I recognized mm-hmm. right off the bat that are in the industry. You could easily go in a different direction where everything was set up for you to be happy at TKO, you know, your day job, and then writing elsewhere and setting something up at Image. You had something at Image. You had, you know, a couple books at Image. So you know the network there. Does it come down to maybe just not having to ask permission for a part? Is that part of it? It sounds like that's what it is. It's like here where, you know, The Dead and the Damned is something that sounds like, it's, you know, a wild and crazy, wild idea book that I don't see maybe Vault doing, you know, but I don't see Marvel doing it ever.
I just The Dead and the Damned around.
Yeah.
And I got feedback on it. And the feedback was, this looks beautiful. It sounds crazy. But, and then the buts were very A, expected, B, I knew, like, again, as an editor who reads pitches all the time, I kind of knew I was setting myself up to kind of get rejections. that doesn't mean I didn't want to try, because I'm not going to preemptively kind of limit myself as a writer, because I want to embrace my writing as fully and as passionately as I do my editing. And while an editor's job is kind of to not just creatively guide, but also to kind of not set up a book to kind of fail within its own publishing structure, where it's like, hey, I really love this book. I don't actually know if we're going to be able to sell this, if people are going to pick it. Like, there's certain projects that are just riskier than others. And part of an editor's job is to mitigate the risks for their publisher, because that in turn informs the risk that the creator takes. If you set up a creator at a publisher and they're like, hey, this book is really cool, but we're not going to be able to sell it or market it, and our readers aren't going to like it, you're setting that creator up to fail, which is not great. So once I had pitched it a while, I was just kind of like, it's going to take me about as much work to make this concept palatable to publishers that it would to just do the whole thing myself. So it wasn't so much a, like, I don't want to be told no, but it was an impulse to try to create another avenue. Because it's not just like, yes, Goats Flying Press is definitely a little bit of a vanity project where I am going to write what I want. But it's not just that. It is me kind of trying to become the spearhead of things I've always wanted to kind of try in comics, in the market, in the marketing, in the physical format, and to not have to ask permission because I'm the one, like, kind of taking the risk, whether financial or otherwise.
Or the experience, because now with Kickstarter, because I've thought about Kickstarter before, but I'm like, where do you start? And the last time I thought about it was like when there was a lot of supply line issues, and I'm like, ah, forget it, you know? But I'm like, I've watched some Kickstart that I put money into just up and disappear and never come to anything. Or the end product was very disappointing, and they're like, oh, it's to be continued. And I'm like, there never was it, you know, you never saw anything else. And I'm like, well, that's sort of underwhelming. And why am I, you know, that's the whole reason why I was just reading something about why Marvel might be having issues, is because everything's a miniseries. There's no reason to invest in any long term, which has always been the thing where long term comics for Marvel and DC, that's been their, you know, where they make the money, where they you know, make things happen, and where the fans flock into every Wednesday, show up for every Wednesday. And that's not really happening. That somebody was noticing that Marvel's moved away from that. And
yeah, I mean, it's different, but like the entire, it's not necessarily Marvel's MO. Like, a corporation doesn't make like creative financial decisions. They kind of just like, I mean, it sounds cosmic horror-y, but it's almost like there's just something in the air. But I mean, for me, it was always the problem, and this is across the board. It's not just in comics. It's that the return on investments are getting razor, razor thin, and they have to be, the number has to go up every quarter, no matter what. And there's no concern for things like a pandemic, or just like, hey, this is not that interesting right now. Like, people aren't really buying this. Like, something in the culture, something in the national pedigree. Like, the beauty of superheroes is that they are infinitely applicable to our situation and our, you know, our lives, but it does take a creative mind to reinterpret them, and it takes an artist a long time to draw them. And if you're shotgunning out 100 books a month at increasing costs and lowering scales, like, it's just not tenable long term. And unless a company is ready to take a hit, or at the very least, like, not make a profit every turn, they're not going to be in a position to reassess their line. And there's so many gears turning that the fear is that once you slow anything down, it'll just stop. And once something stops, someone at the top who doesn't care if you're making comics or
widgets,
selling golf balls or widgets, exactly, is going to be like, well, why do we have
them?
Couldn't we just have one editor who does the job of four, and we'll pay them a quarter? Like, they'll just start seeing it all as numbers. And again, that's kind of what I'm trying to counteract. I won't say Goats Flying Press is a spite store, but it is, in a sense, where I just I've worked in this industry long enough, and I've had feelings in my gut before that I haven't acted on or was not in a position to act upon that later would have possibly turned out to... And this is why it's such a big deal for me. I'm going to finish that sentence in a second. Is it like not like it's taken me this long to kind of put myself in a place where I feel confident to kind of act upon that little voice where I'm just like, I'm just going to try this. We'll see how it goes. I don't need to please anyone but myself. And I need to do what's right by my collaborators or creators and anyone who may in the future want to publish or Scott's Flying Press. I just want it to be good and fair and simple. And I actually think that as naive as that may sound, in the landscape that we are currently experiencing, where we don't trust anything and everything feels predatory and every new industry is a scam, I actually think long-term that that tea light might actually light and keep us warm for some time, because the future is, no one knows what's going
to
happen.
Well, getting back to one thing you said just earlier was the low entry aspects of it, that comics, it doesn't take much to really produce a comic and get it out to a group of people,
yeah,
at the, you know, through Kickstarter or through whatever. And it's something that maybe people don't see right away, or people aren't taking advantage of, I guess, in a way. It has to be, or maybe they are, maybe Kickstarter is, maybe I'm just not seeing it. But I've always, you know, in with my company that we set up, that was part of the pitch, was it doesn't take much to get moving. And if you really hunker down and focus on one thing, and then you can build upon that, which is what you're doing. That it, and because of your experience, you're already, you can see that, you can see, take your experience and your talents and focus in on that instead of being part of a big machine like you were at Marvel or, you know, you know, or whatever, wherever else. I mean, well, I don't know if other publishers you're part of are feel a little hard, you know, just a little smaller than Marvel or whatever. I don't know.
I mean, Kickstarter is, it's like an ecosystem, right? It's not really a judgment call or a, it's a platform. It's like stepping into an alternate dimension almost in that way. As far as the comics goes, and this is, again, my experience with the one Kickstarter that I've run completely solo, built the whole page and everything. There's obviously ways in which that, like, I feel like, especially in comics, the scissor is extremely wide. You have like huge Kickstarters that are legitimately run by like established publishers that conceivably have their own money to spend, but just kind of want to dip into that pool. And they will usually go forward with like famously Boom going in with like Power Rangers or Keanu Reeves, like something big attached to it that will draw a lot of backers, will draw a lot of money. And then on the opposite, so it's almost like you set up a factory space in Kickstarter. They have entire teams, I'm sure, running those Kickstarter campaigns. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have like first-time creator, you know, raising $1,000 to print like zines at Staples and mail them out. It's a difference of degree, like not category. And what I kind of want to enter into the space there is like, I am not going to have an assembly line, you know, producing 500 page hardcovers yet. But I also want to raise the kind of, like you said, like I find the quality of Kickstarters, comic book Kickstarters can vary greatly. And that is down to like experience and having contacts in the industry and printers and doing quality checks and production. I want to raise that level as high as possible at still like a, I'm not going to be able to price compare with the big leagues yet, but I've got like a pretty competitive like sight on where I want to be in a year or two in terms of what I can offer readers. And again, it's all scalable. Like right now, it's been, the Kickstarter ended in October. November, December, January, February. Our books are going to be in March. So 4 months, 5 months at the most after you heard about our book for the first time, it will be in backers' hands first. And because I made the conscious choice to overprint quite aggressively, you know, with our 300 backers and, you know, I could have gotten away with like ordering 500 copies and make them, and that's good. I ordered 2,000. That dropped the price point of per unit to a place where I can make a competitive offer. I can also start experimenting with stuff like deals and you know, coupons and all the kind of experiences I know are part of selling a project. I've never really had that experience myself because I've never worked in sales or marketing in comics. And long term, the more I can produce, the more I can sell, the more some aggregate, I just want Goats Flying Press ideally to be someone's only conduit or first conduit into comics. Be like, oh, I'll just, there's so many comics on Kickstarter. I've heard good things about these guys and I'll just check out one or two of their books. Because every Kickstarter allows me to sell or bundle or combo pack previous projects, right? So when we do the Dead on the Dam 2, which we're working on right now, the Kickstarter for that rewards will include issue one. And if we sell through issue one, that cover will be exclusive. We're going to do, if we ever do a reprint, we're going to have new covers for everything. So we're not going to do the whole like 100 covers by 1,000 artists. I just want it to be very, very focused and good and simple, easy to look through. And the first big barrier for me to overcome will be, when am I, Sebastian Gerner, physically incapable of doing all of this myself anymore? That will be the first kind of high water mark for me, because that means, wow, this is cool. This is scaled to a point where it's now too much for me to reliably do. And then I'll have to solve that problem and keep growing and grow as far as I can without losing sight of what's kind of what was the core impulse here, which is, I don't need another comic book company in my life. I've got plenty of work to do with TKO, but this is something that gives me energy and hope in a way that no for hire comic book work I've done ever has. And because I'm in a unique and very privileged and lucky position to explore that, I want to. Because I am who I am, I don't want to be the only person who benefits from it. I want to start building a publisher and my own ecosystem where creator rights and creator questions and creator desires are paramount, because ultimately I think that that's how you create the truest and funnest and best art for your readers and your backers. And I think that they deserve the best always, because it has always been hard to be a comic book reader for various reasons. And as much as possible, I want to speak to everyone's kind of needs and wants in this industry and deliver it in a way that is as easy as possible. I hope that like that kind of made sense. It's a lot of like ambitious goals, but the odd thing is that, again, 16 years in comics, I don't actually know if anyone's tried to tackle it at this rate. There's obviously a lot of comic book publishers that open, you know, come out, new ones every year. Everyone does good work. But I feel like because it's all for profit, it has to be to a certain extent. There's investors involved. There's studios involved. There's IP interests involved. They're always going to sort of have to make decisions from the same perspective. Mm-hmm. They have to come in, regardless of what their individual MO is, they're in the same ballpark. And what excites me about Goats Flying Press is the idea that it's basically just self-sustaining. At the end of the year, I make a small profit or no profit, that is a victory. If I make a big profit, that is money that I will put back into producing more. First couple of years, like any restaurant, you're gonna have to break even, and that's fine. After that, my dream is to be able to like approach an artist that I really love or a first timer and just not just be like, hey, here's this much money. I have 50,000 that I can invest into your book. Take a year, draw your book. Not only will I like pay your page rate, but I will edit, I will creatively guide, I will help you package and produce. Because like, young artists, like new creators or people coming into comics, like they might have a great story. That doesn't mean they know how to write a script or how to tell it, or like perfect page layout. Great. Now you've got the perfect comic. How about production values, paper stock? What do you want on the cover? Like, is going to make like a cooler comic that if every other publisher said no to it and I said yes to it, I don't know. The thought of being able to do something like that excites me. And growing a network of people who want to help me do that and want to benefit from it and just kind of be a part of something. Again, I'm not the first publisher to do this, but I am the first me to do it. And I'm going to hopefully bring something new, or at least my spin on it.
I've never been a big coffee fan, so I don't like drinking it throughout the day because of how the jitters fracture my focus. Energy drinks have never worked for my taste buds or heart health, so I've always been on the lookout for something to help me keep a good energy level throughout a full day of creative endeavors, chores, and a day job. After discovering Magic Mind, I now drink it a few hours after my morning coffee. It helps me stay focused and creative throughout my busy day. With its all-natural ingredients, I don't have to worry about a lot of sugar getting into my diet, and the benefit of lion's mane mushrooms reduces anxiety and inflammation while supporting cognition, which basically helps out my old brain. As a whole, it really just helps me stay focused throughout the day on the many tasks I have in front of me. And after taking it for a couple of days, the overall effects basically were pretty straightforward. And really, I do not miss the ups and downs of drinking coffee. You can find Magic Mind Energy Drink at magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor. That's magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor, which is all one word. And with the code ANTIX20, ANTIX20, you also get up to 56% off your first subscription or 20% off your one-time purchase. That's ANTIX20, ANTIX20, for 56% off. It also works if you're already a subscriber. You save on your next subscription payment. So if you're like me and not a big coffee fan and looking for something to keep you focused, then I recommend Magic Mind. Once again, you can get it at magicmind.com/portraitofaneditor. That's magicmind.com, portrait of an editor, all one word, and get up to 56% off your subscription for the next 10 days with the code ANTIX20, ANTIX20. Getting back to, like, when you did the Kickstarter, was it exhausting? Was it something, or did it work out for you? Because, I mean, I've seen stories about people, oh, we just finished our campaign and I collapsed. I mean, what, I'm like, wow, is that really what Kickstarter is all about? This sort of all-in, all-consuming kind of marathon where you collapse at the end of it? Or is it maybe just a lot of theater, you know, a little bit of drama that I was reading on social media?
It was surprisingly, it wasn't like physically exhausting. Emotionally, it was a lot. And I fell into a bit of a pit afterwards, I think just because I was so insecure, rather. I didn't really know what to expect going in, and I set myself what I thought was like a pretty, not modest, but like a reachable, you know, figure, which we ended up making, just kind of just barely like squeaking in, which is great. But it was, I don't know what to liken it to. It's like you've never, it's like you can go to the gym and exercise and you know, take boxing lessons and what have you. But like once you're in an actual fight, like things are just going to go the way they go. It's not a perfect analogy, but so I felt pretty tired. I also like kind of launched at a time when, in retrospect, some people came to me and were like, hey, I'm glad you made it. I would have expected you, Sebastian Gerner, to like completely blow everything out of the water. And they felt like it was almost like a dampening, like a cooling effect of like, well, if you can't make 100 million, why, you know, what can I do? And I was like, I don't think I see it like that. I think that whatever factors there were, social media was really bad. Like Twitter, obviously a big way where how I find out about Kickstarters was starting to not work at the time.
Yeah.
Still hasn't worked. So, you know,
next done.
Round is going to be even more challenging. But again, not let that stop me. Kickstarter is its own network. I've had some good experiences with them, contacts, and I'm also going to, like, the second Kickstarter, I think I'm going to tweak where I'm going to actually lower my asking barrier of entry. I'm hoping that the fulfillment of the first campaign will kind of bring confidence to the backers who, you know, have backed us, and then hopefully be able to tell, you know, their, you know, friends and colleagues about that. Because again, like a lot of Kickstarters I've backed, I kind of forgot about. And that's one of the things I want to tackle very aggressively, is to shorten the distance between the Kickstarter campaign ending and my ability to fulfill, which is where I'm I'm kind of considering almost like pre-printing aspects of the book, where like the campaign ends and the shipment is due pretty soon, where I like pre-sell it. Just kind of opportunities. But ultimately, like, the Kickstarter ended in October and people are going to have their books by the end of March. That's 4 months, 5 months. That's about the same amount of time from when you first read about a book in previews, it's announced, and you can buy it at the store on Wednesday. So I'm not that far out. It's not like a year later you actually get the book that you sort of forgot about. And in time, I'm actually going to try and shorten that distance to, I don't know, as much as possible. But it's all possible. It's really just the amount of freedom I have is kind of, it's not paralyzing. It is genuinely liberating.
But, well, because of, I've been burnt on Kickstarter by a couple things, and there's one publisher who I will look at because they're reliable. Every time they've done a Kickstarter, they've, you know, it takes about 4 months, but it arrives, and they deliver on everything they pretty much say they're going to deliver on.
Yeah.
The other two I will never invest in. You know, there's another one that I'm just like, what was this all about? And just, you know, I don't even know what happened to them. But I just, that continuous, and that was one conversation I had when I was looking at Kickstarter. It was like, we were going to collect a webcomic, Decades of Inexperience, that the one I edited, and just, it was all ready to go. So part of the campaign would be, it's not like you're going to have to wait for this to be produced. It's all ready to go. We just need the money to sort of get things released and shipped from, like, say, the printers holding on to, because they need our bill paid, you know?
Right. But, that's, you know, that's the goal. Like, my midterm goal is to have that, is to where the book is 100% done. So in the Dead and the Damned case, like, we had half the book completed and we needed, you know, to kind of secure it. Funding. For the second round, we actually stretched the funding of the first book to the point where we can now get Kelly drawing on the second book. And I'm hoping to have that 100% done, which by the time the campaign ends, we'll just have the file, send that to print. So that'll shave another 6 weeks off of the fulfillment time. So, like, my dream, my goal is by New York Comic Con 2024, where we will be, hopefully, to have two issues of The Dead and the Damned ready for sale, plus possibly a secret project that we're considering right now. But for a first time, you know, crowdfunded publisher, like, that would be, for me, that's massive. Because again, that's work that did not exist this time last year. This time last year, all I had was a name on an application to the New York State of Commerce, you know, to found an LLC. And to see how far I've gotten kind of on my own sweat and my own dime with obviously our backers and supporters is riveting. And I'm just incredibly excited because it allows me to finally bring all of these different ties together. My industry experience, my personal kind of creative desire, and the connection to readers, the community, and especially like young creators, artists who love comics and want to make them and don't know. And in time, what I also want to offer is the experience that I gain on Kickstarter, where if there's a creator, that an artist who wants to write and draw their own book, but sure, they could go to Image, but then they're kind of missing the creative guidance that you might need, where you'd have to hire a publisher, hire an editor, freelance, all of which is totally doable.
But more expensive.
And also, if you're not, you know, if you're not one of the handful of artists that can kind of count on perhaps their Marvel or DC work drawing enough attention to their, you know, creator-owned work, maybe if Goat's Flying Press is in a couple of years in a position where I can reliably sell between 3,000 and 4,000 copies of a book for a modest, you know, a modest profit. Don't even know the word anymore. It's on the dictionary.
I already gave up on that part.
For a creator-owned comic. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to say, like, our, you know, our agreements are probably self-paralyzing, but and to get all that from one publisher. I'll publish you, I'll edit you, I'll help you make the book, I'll help run the Kickstarter.
So
all of that sounds exciting to me.
I know this might go back, and this is a bit of hyperbole, but, you know, we've had Will Dennis on the show. He came from Vertigo. you know, you're on the show, you've been on the podcast a number of times. I've talked to editors who have done their time at Marvel and DC and then moved on and do well in the independent world. Does Marvel and DC really matter to this point when you can take all the knowledge you have of 15 years of experience, get 300 backers to get the you know, get moving? Now, I know you have a day job too, but to get it moving into a publishing company that you obviously have thought out the map of growing this to the point where it, you know, at least you're breaking even. And with the experience that's leaving, the, you know, the shedding of editors from Marvel and DC and just people going out into the world, I mean, are they relevant anymore? I mean, do they really need to break talent to be able to go cycle back around and go work at Image and, you know, and then produce their own books or go to another, you know? I mean, are we getting to a point where, yes, they're still needed to get for at least retail because they are the number one and number two with characters and recognition for the genre, but are they really needed for the genre? I mean, not for the genre, but for the for comic books, for, you know, the art form. Now, for the genre, yes, of superheroes, yes, but for, they don't really dive into any other genres anymore now that Vertigo's been shut down. And are they really expanding, you know, the comic book form, the art form of it? You know, I don't know. It might be,
It's a long, I mean, I think short answer, no. Long answer, short answer, no with an if. Long answer, no with a but. I think they're always going to be relevant as long as people want Marvel and DC stuff. You know, the characters will outlive everyone working on these creations and the companies that own them. I think that the, what's so fascinating to me about Marvel is that the original conflict between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, where you have one collaborator who ostensibly does, you know, created, harness the pure creative chaos. Jack Kirby, who was just like a dude working in a basement in Queens. And then you had Stan Lee, who whose talents and contributions were they were important, but they were also much more rife, like by personal conflict. Like I think Stan, if you read like a biography or was a lot more conflicted about making comics and wanted to do other things and was drawn into the hustle and bustle and the glamour of it. And Jack Kirby was just happy making them to an extent, like as a job. And I think that in every comic book creator reside the two wolves of Stan Lee, who like wants to be seen and wants to not be just seen as a comic book creator. Like that's kind of embarrassing because they're kids stuff. So in all of that, I think Marvel and DC both will continue to struggle between the two extremes. But no, I mean, comics, they could, both of those places could shutter tomorrow and you could still go into a comic book store and read tons of good books. You know, we've never really seen comics completely disappear. I mean, we talk about the death of comics. Like I've been trying to kill them for 16 years and they just won't stay dead.
And you keep working for them too.
It's like being a grave digger, you know, and the zombies pop up every night. You got to put them back in the ground. No, I mean, I'm trying to not see it like that because, again, at some point you enter the thinking of numbers of, like, sales figures have gone down, comics are dying, and then you have some comic book creators who are like, we all have to serve a shift at the altar of Marvel and DC. It's just like, what are we... If it's just about, like, domination, if it's just about, like, comics used to sell more and now they sell less, ergo, we're losing some kind of purity, like you very quickly get into the realm of like, this is starting to sound like it's about something else and comics just become the weird straw man. Comics could stop printing tomorrow and you would still have the entire world of web comics. Of if you go to Japan, you have the doujinshi, which are just, you know, like fan-made comics about anything, any character. Like comics are so, there's like the mortar between all of pop culture. I don't think anything's going to change that ultimately. And I just want to do whatever I can to harness whatever little bit of that energy I can into a space where someone who is curious, someone who likes either my work or the creators I've worked with can count on a certain level of professionalism, quality, and reliability to engage in a medium and an art form that I think is incredible and gives me, again, beyond making my living doing this, gives me sustenance in a way I actually don't have really the words to describe outside of like a religious or spiritual experience. And to me, that's enough for Goats Flying Press. Long term, we don't know, who knows. I'm trying not to make any decisions off of like, haha, but in 10 years, this will pay off when I sell off the IP. I was like, no. I've set up Goats Flying Press to legitimately only work.
I was part of the IP thing, and that's just a ridiculousness. I look back and I'm like, that was, you know,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't really work. You have to still.
IP only makes sense when people care about it. And the reason people care about Marvel and DC is that these characters have been around for generations. You have parents, fathers, you know, kind of bequeathing their Batman collection to their sons. And then that's why they're important. I think that the well of these characters is being tapped and dried out way too quickly. I think it can replenish over time, but who knows? With the way things are going right now, companies expanding, collapsing, contracting, like, I don't think anyone is too big to fail anymore because their expectations are outlandish. You can't grow forever all the time. Cancer does that, and that ultimately kills the host. So I think what we're seeing across the industry is people, I mean, it always hits the people at the bottom. People are getting fired because numbers need to make up. Like, that's not a tenable way to keep an industry going. And if you're going to take away our opportunity to do this for a living, you're going to be left with people who are just going to do it as a passion. And while that's a shame, if that's how far it came, I'm trying to, in whatever small way I can, help counteract that by building just one small bulwark of experience, passion, talent, and community for us to put some books out. If it can grow to encompass not just hundreds of readers, but possibly thousands or more in the future, that's great. And if it doesn't, that's also great. Because like you said, 300 readers out of a pool of 300 million Americans, that's small. But even if I made 3 million out of a pool of 300 million Americans, that's still small. And then out of the world readers, 3 billion, like it's a difference of degree, you know, not category. So I'm not worried about any of that. And it feels incredible for the first time to kind of not have to worry about any of that. I'll do all the worrying, you know, for any creators, any backers, any readers. But I hope that when people have The Dead and the Damned in their hands, number one, they'll see like this was made possible by 300 backers for a first-time Kickstarter, for a first-time publisher, and to feel, you know, galvanized and invigorated by how much is possible when we just kind of get together, do what we know feels good and is right, and it actually doesn't take a VC or some billionaire movie, you know, studio to drop some crumbs on the floor for us to snap up. We can do all of this ourselves, and that's incredible.
Yeah, and as we keep coming back to, 300 doesn't really take, you know, 300 people coming to that party, and then you're off to the races. So
that's it, you know.
And then you can just, you know, keep building that, and it obviously will.
You know, I hope it's 300 who will come back, and I hope it's 300 all of whose names I will, you know, remember, and and in time. It's a lot of like taking back power that you've kind of given away over your medium, over your love, over your labor, obviously. And I feel it's exciting. You know, there's definitely also, of course, times where I feel intimidated and I'm about to get 800 pounds of comics shoved into this office and then I'll see how I feel. But it doesn't, like, nothing has happened yet that's made me shy away from it. And that, knowing myself and knowing how hard it is for me to kind of step out and be confident about something, that means something to me. And I want to lean into it. I want to explore it. And what's more is I want to share it. And that's kind of just a cool spot for me to be in. And I'm not going to second guess it too much and just kind of see where it takes me. But also, again, like I'm about to have an office full of comics, and I've set myself up to be able to fulfill and ship them myself at the lowest possible rate that I can approve of. But I've got like I think I've got a pretty competitive like retailer bundle. Like I'll get you 5 books or I can send you one for free, like a physical copy if you just want to see what it'll look like. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to do that. Again, I'm not going to be in 1,000 comic book stores right off the bat, but if I get into 6, that's pretty cool. They talk to each other. They know what they like. They know their customers, their business people. Like, reach out, talk to someone. You're not dealing with a service rep. You're just dealing with me, the guy who runs the whole show. And just grow that. It all sounds very naive and maybe blue-eyed, but there's something here. Like, I just want to try it and see how it goes. And I think it'll take me somewhere. Like, I've got a good feeling about this.
So what we can do is when you're about to do the next Kickstarter for issue 2 of The Dead and the Damned,
oh, yes,
we can talk a brief moment and talk about that and see where,
yeah, I'd love,
you know,
to do
what
cool,
your
promo, yeah,
your approach is, you know, how things have changed and see the evolution of Goats Flying Press.
I'd love
so that. I'll let you get back to work because it sounds like you got a lot to do. So. Yeah. But at least you're doing something you love, so
that's right.
You can put the hours into it.
That's right.
So it was great catching up, and
thanks for having me.
Hopefully, I have plans to go to New York, so we'll see. At least see you then. But
yeah,
we'll definitely talk about. You know, keep me up to date about when the next Kickstarter is, so we can.
Yeah, bring you I will. On I will absolutely
and do a little promo. So,
thanks so much.
Good luck with everything. I liked The Dead and the Damned. It was some crazy, wild ideas. And it feels like some things in other conversations we've had, I can like, oh, I can see why this is something you would write, you know, because I'm like,
thank you.
There's some music stuff that you've mentioned and things. And I'm like, yes, it feels exactly like that.
Yeah, it's a very me book. I've had numerous people respond to me with along those lines, like, oh, this is very you. And I was like, well, that's,
yeah.
if you're gonna start a publisher just to write a book, like, it's got to be the most me.
There's nothing wrong with that. So
right.
Have a great day, and I'll be talking to you later. Okay.
Thanks so much.
See you. Bye.
Cheers.